Blog Talk Radio.
Your host, Merle Exit. And let's see, it's 7 p.m. on my time. It's dark outside. It's cold in New York City. Well, I guess cold compared to if you're in warm weather, but I guess not as cold as like 10 degrees. Thank goodness for that. So let's tell you about the show I have. It's Women's History Month, but I'm calling it Women's Herstory Month. Have you ever noticed the word history, H-I-S, as in his story? Yep, seems to be that way too much. So I'm calling it Women's Herstory Month. It'll be about her stories. So, instance, we're going to have Mary Mulville of Grace Institute. She's going to talk about the free training programs for women that they have at this at the institute, and the road to getting a job. We're going to have this is the year of Women's Hall of Fame induction. And so we're having two of the women who are going to be inducted into the Women's Hall of Fame in October. They have recently found out that they are going to be inducted. We have Karen DeCrow, nationally recognized attorney, author, and activist, and a whole long list of other things, which we'll go into. And then we're going to have, I'll find the other one. Wait, where'd she go? I wrote this whole long thing. Let's see, where did I write this? Susan Kelly Dreyas, I think I pronounce it. Susan Kelly Dreyas has worked to enact legal protections in behalf of women. So, she's big on services as far as the Violence Against Women Act. And so, before I go to my first interview, I know I'm not allowed to have it. Yes, I'm still on Nutrisystem. Yep. So I'm not eating, it's not the same bad food. Just I'm not eating food that's not on the Nutrisystem plan. I'm eating their food. Plus, I'm adding my fruits and vegetables and little proteins, et cetera, et cetera. But, listen, I can always listen to this commercial and enjoy it, even though I can't have it.
What would you do to earn brownie points? How about treating someone to what may be the best brownies they've ever tasted? Fairy Tale Brownies. They may seem like one of the richest bars of fudge, with varieties that include caramel, chocolate chip, espresso nib, raspberry swirl, mint chocolate, all made with Calbo dark Belgian chocolate. But yes, they are brownies, and that's no fairy tale.
And you can get these luscious things by going to www.brownies.com. Yes, they're that good. Believe me, they are really that Everett. Anyhow, so let's begin our show. Do I have Mary? Are you on the air here?
Yes, I am.
How do you do?
How do you do? It's very nice to talk to you.
Yes. Now, just flow with it all. Don't worry about any questions I'm going to ask. This is very...
Oh, it's not a quiz.
No quiz. No. And it's not a quiz to anybody who's listening. They won't get, no papers are going to be handed out. Tell us about the Grace Institute.
Oh, okay. I'd love to talk about it. Grace Institute is a tuition-free job training program for women. We teach women in this training program Microsoft Office Suite, business writing, business math, and then we really work on the soft skills, you know, how to get the job, the resume, how to dress, how to act, be on time, all those things. And we have two programs. One is during the day, and it's 4.5 months from 9 to 3 every day for 4.5 months, and we go through that whole program. And then in the evening, we have another program, and that's for women who are in what we call dead-end jobs. You know, they have a job, but they're not going anywhere because they don't have any skills. So they come, and that's a 9-month program in the evening, 3 nights a week, starting in September, going until May. And the point of that is for those women to get out of the jobs they're in and move on. In the overall, our mission is not only to train the women, but to get them jobs with benefits. So the Grace family, who started Grace Institute, their whole idea is that if you get a job with benefits, you can really move along. And so that's what we do. We have an 80% placement rate, and we're hoping that in 2009 that will continue to be, but we'll see.
I'm sure. We'll find ways.
We'll find ways. Well, we are. We're working very hard at it.
Now, what are, when you say, like, before I get into the whole thing, when you say, like, people, like, women who are at, like, dead-end jobs and because they don't have the skills, what type of jobs would they be in?
All right. When by a dead-end job, I mean I'm covering a multitude of sins. You know, I mean, could be someone who has been working as a nanny and that job is over, but they don't have any computer skills at all. But they're still working and, you know, they're just getting ready to leave, but they have no way of getting into the job market. It could be somebody who's a home health aide and doesn't want to do that anymore. But it could also be somebody working in a corporation where they're doing a job that doesn't require any kind of skill. It could be they're in the back room, they could be putting boxes on shelves, all sorts of things, and they've decided, you know, the job is, you know, nobody is going to promote me in this job unless I get computer, and it's all about getting computer skills.
Sure.
So, and some of the women are working for very good companies, but they know they're not going anywhere, they'll never get a big increase in salary, and they have families to support, so they're looking to move on. I mean, we had one woman one time who was a driver for FedEx, and she said, I can't carry the boxes anymore. So it's the women come in, you know, with all different kinds of jobs. And the women who come at night are a fabulous group because they are just dying to get out of those jobs. And so they come in, they work really hard, they show up on time, you know, they take care of everything. So they're a very good group. That is not to say the women during the day are not a good group, but it's a completely different group of women.
So what have you found, like, just to get the information out there, tell me some, like, other kinds of jobs that what they call, which what would be called unskilled, so to speak. In other words, when I say unskilled, say, I know I grew up with you have to know how to type. I remember when you couldn't get a job unless you knew how to type.
Well, now you can't get a job.
Unless you know how to use a computer.
Unless you know how to use a computer. And, you know, so the women who come to our day program, many of those have been working, like, in retail. And, you know, they've been working at all different kinds of retail, whether it's in a restaurant or in a department store or in the local, you know, deli. And they realize that $6.50 an hour is just not going to do it. So they come in and they are, you know they need these skills. And the women who come to our program are unbelievable. I mean, they totally transform their lives. You'll have someone who comes in and was working at a job for $6.50 an hour, never with any thought that she could ever move anyplace else. And they'll turn their lives around by working really, really hard and get a job, say, at a place like Memorial Sloan Kettering, starting at $35,000 a year.
Mm.
The average salary of, no, I shouldn't say salary, that's a, that doesn't say, the average income of our day students coming into our program, their average income is about $6,000. When
wow.
they leave us, the average income is about $32,000.
Wow. So it, when you say the ones that come in during the daytime, in other words, you say their income is about $6,000, what kind of work do you find that they're doing? You know, in other words, are these like women who have a like a part-time job?
Well, very often, you know, as I say, they're in retail, or some of them are on public assistance. Some of them come from shelters. Some of them have been home, you know, doing wonderful work taking care of their children or taking care of an elderly parent or an aunt, and they've been out of the workforce for a long time and therefore don't have any skills. So, you know, every story is a different story, but the bottom line is they don't have a job and there's no ability for them to go into the market except with a, you know, a minimum wage job. Absolutely no chance of getting into the market. It's amazing. If you don't have really good computer skills, getting to work in a corporation where you'll get a benefit package and get a decent salary, that's the only way.
All right. Yeah, as a writer, it's like I can remember the stages of when I had to get an article. I had to had just like type it up, and then I could fax it.
Right.
Yeah, and then
none of that anymore.
No. Now it's all I have to do everything on the computer.
And email it.
And email it. And thank goodness now. I mean, I have a webmaster, so he does everything because I, you know, that's a whole completely different skill of knowing how to do a web page.
Oh God!
But now
yeah.
these, you know, it's like. And for me, I mean, it's come from just my own website with samples of articles to now, and you know, now that then came the radio, and then came all of a sudden now I'm hearing, oh, I should have my own thing called Blogspot.
Oh, right, that's the next thing, your Blogspot.
So
yeah.
I have
We're not advanced. We're not teaching them blogs yet.
But it's just interesting to see in terms of patterns of. More and more that one needs just as a writer, you know,
right.
in terms of skills. Now, if you ask me anything about something that has to do with like a program like Excel or something like that, I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Right. Well, see, that's the stuff we teach, because the women who come to Grace Institute are going for either entry level jobs or mid level jobs, depending on their background, and they'll learn Excel, Access, PowerPoint, all that stuff. And you know what the amazing thing is? The women who come in, by and large, know very, very little about the computer. The one thing they do have to know is the keyboard. I mean, you really can't do anything if you don't know the keyboard. So they have to know how to type. They don't have to
right.
know how to type fast, but they do have to know how to type, and they do have to know the keyboard. But it is amazing what they learn in 4.5 months, because by the time the women decide to come to Grace Institute, they are committed to changing their lives. And they come in there, and they work all day long in the classes. Then they'll stay after for tutoring if they need it, or they'll just work with classmates on improving their skills. And, I'm like you. My computer skills are not great, but they really do learn a lot in 4.5 months. And then the women in the evening program, the same thing.
That's fabulous.
Because, you know, it's just rote, really. You know, it's just, you know, doing it over and over and over again, and then you get it. You know, the women really don't. We do not get a lot of problems with the women learning the computer. They really do very, very well on the computer. One of the things that is sometimes more difficult is actually the business writing, you know, actually knowing, you know, the verbs and the nouns and all that kind of stuff. But by and large, with regard to the computer, they do very, very well.
That's really great. Writing was my worst subject in school, and somehow...
Somehow you learned it.
I don't know. I just became a writer, and just in case, I mean, I purposely did this. I wrote a book. I recently wrote a book. Everybody my whole life said, Meryl, you need to write a book. No one's going to believe it. And it's like based on a kind of thing in my life. If I can do it, you can do it. Because I've done just one thing after another, different kinds of jobs, all kinds of. But very funny. The whole thing. It's really funny of some of the things I've done. And it's just like, okay, I need a job and whatever.
But see, women are very good that way, you know, because
yeah.
they just go out and they, you know, and your story would be a great story for our women to hear, because that's what they want to know. They want to know that there are other women out there who have, you know, done all sorts of different things leading up to finally doing something that really will bring them an income.
Yeah.
And women are amazing, the things that they can accomplish. I mean, what they do, they have children, they come in, they work really hard, they find these great jobs, they do a good job on the job, they take care of their kids, they make sure the kids get a good education. And women are great at turning things around. And we have so many women who come in and turn around their lives at Grace Institute. It's amazing.
Well, I have to tell you something, just, you know, like something just that popped in my head. There was a conversation. I happen to be I'm the director of public relations for the New York Sharks women's tackle football team.
Oh, my God. I didn't know that women do tackle football.
Oh, yeah. Got a really great team, too. And what happened, there was a discussion about in terms of coaching, and we were talking to this we were coaching some girls, and there was a male coach there who had a flag football team. And so we kind of asked him, well, you know, do you see a difference in coaching men and coaching women? And he says, yes. He says, with guys, you tell them what to do, and they'll just do it. With women, you'll tell them what to do, and they'll say, well, tell me why I'm doing it first. And the idea is that because women will then put it in their heads and remember.
And they'll remember it.
And they'll remember it, knowing why they did it, and guys will just, you know, they won't know why they did it.
And women are more creative as a result, you know. I mean, they look at jobs and they try to do them, you know, more efficiently. No,
we
women.
Just got to make sure they get paid equally.
Yeah, well, that's a whole thing. That article in the Times on Sunday about how pay is still, you know, it's still unequal in so many areas between men and women. Just astounding. Astounding.
Yeah, I know. I've gone through that. But anyway, let me first get to, how did this institute get formed?
Well, it was started by a man, no less. W.R. Grace was an Irish immigrant who came to the United States in the 1850s, and he started a shipping company. And he was also mayor of New York twice, and he was also the mayor who, he was mayor when the Statue of Liberty was given to us by France. And his men who worked on his boats just said to him, Mr. Grace, our wives, our daughters, they can't find jobs. So he said, well, we'll start a training school, teach them, you know, skills, and then they'll be able to find jobs. So he started us back in 1897, and what do you think he was teaching? He was teaching cooking, sewing, child care, all the things, you know, that women at that time, that's the way they would find a job. But it was very interesting. About 5 or 6 years later, he said, you know what? New York is going to become a very big business city, and I want the women to learn business skills. So he started the women learning typing, stenography, and all those things. And then, you know, throughout the 20th century, it just evolved and evolved and evolved into, you know, no longer the typewriter, you know, then the computer and so forth. But it was started by a man who really believed that if women, and this is part of our mission, that if women are going to work, they should be working where they're going to get a decent living so that they can be economically independent. And it's just a wonderful mission that we work with. And the Grace family has continued to support this organization since way back in 1897.
Wow.
We still have Grace family members on our board. So it's a wonderful family in that they've kept this charity going all these years.
By the way, I'm just curious. I don't know if you know. Is this the same Grace family that deals with the concrete plants?
Concrete plants.
And they have concrete, or no? I don't know if they have asphalt, but concrete plants.
Not that I know of. The Grace family is, you know, the Grace lines, which is what it was originally,
right.
And then it just became, you know, the Grace Corporation. The Graces, when Mr. Grace died in 1994. They no longer are a part of it. So I don't, and I haven't been with them, you know, I've been there 7 years, so I don't know that they had concrete plants. But it was shipping. That's what it, how it all started, in shipping.
Okay. Well, they might have been. I just...
They may have. They may have back in the 50s and 60s. But it was a huge shipping, and they had the Grace lines. They also had a cruise line. But it was originally started running, ships from
right.
South America to the United States, just taking cargo back and forth.
Uh-huh. Well, it could be them.
Could be.
And if so, I worked, well, and then worked for them. It was one of the places I worked.
Oh,
it was
that's
one of the,
funny.
Yeah, It was like, part-time we will train. I said, okay, what is it?
Oh, isn't
that
funny?
And I wound up going to concrete and asphalt plants and being an inspector.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, interesting.
I mean, at the time, it was back in early 90s. I was getting over $10 an hour plus benefits.
Oh, well, that was very good.
And then I, you know, like, basically it was, and these jobs still exist.
Mm-hmm.
And just women don't know about it.
Yeah,
they make this kind of money, and I'm sure it's more. And it's all training on the job.
Yeah, and, you know, the other thing is, too, women have to find out more and more that there are different kinds of jobs. I think sometimes women think that there's only one thing that they can possibly do.
Right.
And we do try to do open their eyes to the possibilities of different things. Because there are so many things. You may not want to just, you know, sit in an office all day long.
Right. But at least, like, knowing the skills, it's like, I'm sure... And I could think of all the things that, you know, once I learned how to type or things like that. You know, it's funny when I go back and think of something. I think I learned typing, I guess, at junior high school.
Yeah.
In junior high school, I learned how to type, and I needed I wanted some service credit. And I actually worked the monitor board in the school.
Oh, gee.
I mean, what was I all of at that time? I skipped 2 years of school.
Oh, my
and
God.
So I was all of, like, maybe... 10 or 11 years old. I mean, when I think about it, here I am, like 10 or 11 years old. I'm sitting in the school office.
Oh, my gosh.
And I'm answering the phones with an old switchboard.
Oh, my gosh.
But that wound up getting me, like, one of the jobs. Of course, it wasn't that old switchboard. I had to learn to work. I guess I forgot what they called them afterwards. Of course, they don't have them anymore.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
But it's interesting how some skills became so basic.
Right.
And then you start using them, like, later on, you know, for different things. Now, how many students per class?
Per individual class, there's 25 students. But we bring in about 200 students each semester. And there's about 25 women in a class. And then in the evening class, we bring in probably about 100 students in September. So if women are interested in coming, we have an open house every Wednesday, or they can just check our website, which is www.graceinstitute.org, which is very easy.
Mm-hmm.
But they can call us in we're in Manhattan, 212-832-7605. They can call us in the city. But every Wednesday at 12 and 4, we have an open house. So women can come in, they can see the facility, we show them a video all about the program, we answer all their questions, you know, they can talk to teachers, sit in on classes, and see what it's all about.
Now, it's just like as a thought, let's say if somebody, hears about this, let's say, all right, they live in Maine, and they have a friend or a relative that lives in New York, and they hear about this, they say, well, you know, like, here, stay at my house, you know, for the next 6 months, and you could take this free class. Can they?
Oh, sure.
Can they be, in other words, as long as they get there.
Right, as long as they're there.
They don't have to be concerned.
As long as they show up every day.
Right, in other
right.
words, they don't have to be a resident of New
no,
York.
No, I mean, we basically just have people from the five boroughs, but that's just
right.
because that's the convenience of it all. You know?
Right.
And even, you know, some boroughs we get more people because of the fact, you know, Upper Manhattan and the Bronx, because we're on the number 6 line, so it's very convenient.
Right.
But we also get a lot of people from Queens who come in on the bus or come in on the F train.
Right.
You know, so, you know, it's, it. You know, everything in New York is a matter of convenience. You know, if it's easy for you to get to, that's what, you know, why they come.
Yeah.
But women, you know, who really want to, you know, get really good training and then get a good job at the end of the day, you know, Grace Institute is really the answer. I mean, it just is amazing. We have this 80% placement rate. And the jobs that we get all have benefits. So they're very, very good jobs at very good companies.
So there's no cost for the training
the only
itself.
The only charge is for books. They just
have
to pay the book fee, you know, just for the books, that's all. But otherwise, no, there's no charge. And it's, you know, only 4.5 months. And job placement assistance at the end of the day.
That's really great.
Yeah.
Now I understand you said that they have to show up in business attire.
Yes.
Said?
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we require that because first of all, it gets people in the right mood and the right mode in terms of you know, just getting ready for the workforce. And very often we have employers who come in, you know, to visit us, and then they walk around. And, you know, when they see how well-dressed the women are and how they, you know, how they're doing in class. They have a much more positive attitude toward coming to our job fair. We have two job fairs at the end of each semester, and we have about 30 employers who come to those job fairs, and they come just for the Women of Grace Institute. No one else is at the job fair, just the Women of Grace Institute. So as you know, part of the whole thing is not only having the skills, it's your manner, how you're dressed, how you present yourself. So we work very, very hard on those skills.
Now, is there, and I know there's something having to do with, like, I forgot what it's called, there's some group that deal that gives out clothing to women.
Right. We have Dress for Success.
Yes.
We work very closely with Dress for Success. We also work with Bottomless Closet, and they give out clothes for women.
Okay.
We also have a partnership with one of the corporations, McGraw-Hill. They do a suit drive for us every year. So there, you know, there's always, you know, nobody has to worry that they can't get the clothes. We definitely can find places for them to get the clothes. So
yes,
that's never, ever a problem.
I worked for McGraw-Hill, too, one point.
Oh, did you? Oh, my gosh. Old home week for you.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I would do things because I was always dealing with, like, temp agencies
mm-hmm.
all the time. And so I would go from all, you know, just like, okay, whatever, well, what do you got? And as long as they know, I, you know, got some money. That's, you know, so, you know, I worked. And there were a few, like, for instance, McGraw-Hill, where I wound up as having it as a full-time job.
Yeah, well, see, that happens a lot. We deal with that, too. You know, women go in as a temp job, and it turns into a full-time job.
Yeah. Which
yeah,
is,
that happens all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which,
or sometimes they go in for an internship. And that turns into a full-time job.
Yeah,
yeah, because people see you in action. They know, you know, that you're going to be a good employee. You know, you're going to work hard and so forth. So it works very, very well.
Good. I'm glad to hear also, you know, that in terms of clothing, because like that was like in my head, I'm thinking, well, you know, what if you don't have the clothing? I mean, like, you know, the it's not like it's, some of the clothing is like it's very expensive.
Right. Yeah. You know, one of the things we do in, you know, when we have these open houses every Wednesday, you know, at 12 and 4,
yeah.
When the women come in, we explain all this to them. And then we also explain to them, you know, how they can get the clothing. We also have a thrift shop guide so that if the women, you know, we have one woman on staff who's a thrift shop aficionado, and she believes you can find really fabulous things at thrift shops. So she talks to the women about how clever they can be in going to thrift shops. And so that's another avenue. But, you know, there are plenty of, if someone really wants to do the program, clothing is not going to hold them back.
Yeah.
Because there are all sorts of ways to get really, really quality clothing.
Yeah.
And sometimes the clothing is brand new.
Well, that's great. Now, I'm just kind of covering so people can know that, you know, there's nothing to hold women, know nothing to hold them back.
No, I'm very glad you touched on that. Yeah, there's nothing to hold them back because, you know, when they come in, it's tuition free. They just pay for the books, and then the clothing is there. And it's just an outstanding program. They will come out of there with skills. They will not believe what they can do in 4.5 months. And we have so many stories of women who come in, you know, and, you know, have just done nothing in an office and turn out to be superstars in the classroom and then get wonderful jobs. And these
right.
are not women who have had a lot of experience beforehand. So it's a whole new world for them. But they, you know, as women always do, they rise to the occasion.
Yes, we have to.
Yes, yes, we do.
So, well, I'm really happy that you were able to talk with us about this.
Well, I really appreciate you having me on. It was very, very nice. And I just want to remind the women again to check our website at
mm-hmm.
graceinstitute.org and to call us at 212-832-7605 or just come to our open houses on every Wednesday at 12 and at 4. Or
okay.
if they just want to call and get information, just call Grace
sure.
Institute and we'll give them information over the telephone.
You got it. I'll probably be writing about it this month too, as I focus on women's history.
Oh, terrific, terrific! And
so,
if you and listen, Merle, give me a call if there's any questions I can answer for you or anything like that.
Sure, and maybe I can come in and do a lecture for them.
I would love it. Would love it.
They'll be surprised at what one can do.
That's right. And
okay.
everybody needs to hear those stories. Everyone needs to hear those stories.
Okay.
Okay, Merle. Thank you so much for having me on. It was delightful.
You're very welcome. Thanks,
okay.
Mary.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. Yeah, so I hope that people take advantage of this, or women that take advantage of this. And, well, I ain't going to go to commercial because I'm going to go right to my next caller as we talk about one of the inductions into the Women's Hall of Fame. Okay, let me click on and open up the mic. Go ahead. Okay, your mic is open. Now you can talk to me.
Hi, this is Karen DeCrow.
Hello.
Hello, I'm calling at the right time, I hope.
Oh, yes, it's perfect. Look at that, 7:30, right on the nose.
Okay.
So, I had already introduced that we were, you know, talking about the two people who will be inducted into the Women's Hall of Fame. So the first thing I want you to tell us all is, like, who the hell are you that you're being inducted?
Well, you know, it's a question I ask myself. Who am I that, you know, why me? I imagine that the reason I'm was selected, and I'm really honored and excited and grateful, is because of the fact that I was at in the 1970s a national president of NOW, the National Organization for Women, and I'm an attorney. Most of my practice has to do with sex discrimination, so it's my work, I guess, in the feminist movement, which makes me very happy that it's being recognized.
Oh, that's great. Like, okay, so go ahead, toot your horn. Tell us what you've done.
Well, I guess my goal in my professional life and probably my personal life also is to make this a society where there's really no distinction between males and females, and where women are not excluded, as we have been for centuries, from most of the activities and institutions in our culture. And although I'd like to take full credit, I would say there's a small group of us who've worked very hard for about 40 years and have basically challenged everything, corporations, universities, the scientific world, the art, world of art, the law, medicine, you name it, and brought lawsuits and tried to change legislation and picketed and sometimes made ourselves extremely present in the front of problems that existed. And I think that a young girls growing up today are growing up in a totally different world than I know I did when I grew up.
In terms of, well, yes, I'm sure, but specifically in terms of what specifically?
Well, there's very little in this society that now is closed to women, and that's thrilling. I mean, you and I, in a pre-interview, talked about sports. When I was growing up, women simply, you know, there was Babe Dietrichson or there was an occasional sports star, but women did not participate in sports. And now, thanks to Title IX, that's a big part of girls' life and adult women's lives. And this is opening a door that had never been opened before.
Yeah, that's quite true. I'm so glad. Otherwise, I wouldn't be so crazy trying to be the director of public relations for the New York Sharks.
Well, there's a job that wouldn't have been open because there wouldn't have been the New York Sharks.
That's true. Which, you know, like, oh, something else I have to do. Okay, but it's pushing forward into. Now I understand. I mean, I seem to remember that Obama was talking about that he was going to push for, like, equal pay for equal, you know, women, equal, you know, quality on pay. He said that in his campaign. Do you think he's going to do it?
Oh, I think Obama's going to be excellent on the subject of equality for women and girls. actually, equal pay has been in the law since 1963.
Right. Doesn't mean it's enforced, though.
Yeah. So you, well, to some extent, I think during the Clinton administration, there was a lot of good emphasis on equality between men and women in the workplace. And, well, for example, one thing that Obama pushed for, your listeners, and you are no doubt aware of the whole situation with Lilly Ledbetter. Lilly Ledbetter, there was a case recently decided by the Supreme Court which effectively barred women from bringing lawsuits if they brought the lawsuit after 180 days from when the discrimination took place.
Right.
And most women, of course, don't realize in 6 months that they're being discriminated against. And
yeah.
Lilly Ledbetter had, it had been years, many, many years before she realized that she was getting paid considerably less than men doing the same job. The lower courts upheld her case and awarded her millions of dollars. And the U.S. Supreme Court, in a narrow decision, and the majority was Supreme Court judges who had been appointed by our most recent president, George W. Bush, said, well, if she didn't bring her case within 180 days, she's out. So Obama, President Obama, urged the Congress to pass a law, which he said he would sign, overturning that decision of the U.S. Supreme Court. Actually, the Congress had passed a law saying that it didn't have, it had to be 180 days was unreasonable. And George Bush vetoed it. President Obama said, pass it again and I won't veto it. So that was recently signed into law, I believe at the end of January, which is a very good step in that direction. I know from my practice that most women who are being discriminated against on the job, it takes years for them to find out because employers are very pretty much unified in telling everyone, don't tell anyone what you're earning because it's to their advantage. You know, nobody should know that they're being underpaid, whether it's sex discrimination or race discrimination. Or,
right.
So that, yes, I think President Obama is going to be excellent on the subject. Also on the subject of women's health, the Bush administration was so backward on reproductive freedom and access to abortion and other forms of birth control. This administration is going to be very excellent, I think, on that, in that, you know, realm.
Yeah. Let me ask you, do you have like any like really like a good like little anecdote story or something of something that happened with you while you were, you know, doing this?
Well, since we had talked about sports, why don't I give an example that might interest your listeners. I had a case of a woman who had coached girls basketball at a high school. And the girls' team could only use the gym to practice when the boys didn't want to use it. So, you know, they could do it at 6 in the morning or something like that.
Right.
And when the boys went to games, a lovely school bus was available to take them to away games. And when the girls had games, if, you know, their parents had to drive them in cars, private cars, the boys would have these wonderful sports banquets where the whole school, you know, would come out and cheer them. No such thing for the girls. One particular indignity was the boys had new equipment, and the girls' team, they used the basketballs after they, you know, didn't bounce anymore. It was really extremely embarrassing. And my client, who was the coach of, she was a phys ed teacher and the coach of the girls' team, brought a complaint under federal law saying that there was discrimination against girls in her school. And she got fired. Bing, bing. One of the things that came out in the case that I found was humorous, although obviously sad underneath, was she said since they never had access to practice facilities, she taught her girls to play hinge ball, H-I-N-G-E. In other words, they were aiming at door hinges, you know, to figure out where to hit the ball.
Right.
So while the case was going on, we got a lot of publicity, and a college in the area where she was teaching high school got interested in her, a college that wanted to obey Title IX. So they offered her a job as a coach at a college, which paid more money and had shorter hours and was just a more prestigious job. So I'm not sure what's happening right now, but I know that it had a happy ending because she got a better job. But that was one case. Another, if we're talking about sports, I personally testified years ago. I took a look at the budget for a city around here, and what was allotted for boys' after-school sports was $99,000 a year, and what was allotted for girls' after-school sports was $200 a year.
Wow.
Seemed like somewhat of a discrepancy.
Now, was this, when you're talking about this, was this like these were private schools?
These were public schools.
Public schools. Whoa.
Public schools. And this was, Title IX had been passed, but was definitely not being enforced. So I prepared my testimony, and I went before the Board of Education and presented these figures that had been released. Since it was a public school, it was not a secret. And the head of the Board of Education said, he didn't deny that these were the figures. He said, well, what's wrong with that? So we had a long way to go. But these are, you know, these are the kinds of things.
I'm going to look into this in terms of the public schools to see the what the budgets are.
My guess is today, 2009, it would probably be pretty equitable.
I'm not
but
so sure.
You're not so sure.
No.
Well,
I was speaking to somebody who was doing coaching for not even tackle football but flag football.
Yeah.
And I said to her, you know, you really do good with kids. I said, why don't you really go out there and do something? And she said to me that she looked into it and the budgets of the schools, the public schools, and she says they don't have money for girls for this kind of thing. It's
well,
like, you know,
do they
have
it for boys?
Yes.
Well, then that's ripe for a challenge.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to look into now.
Right, because there's absolutely no reason at this, you know, time in history that should exist.
Yeah.
And anything in a public school is, you know, you can get the figures and so on.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm going to, I'll delve into that because, you know, we're trying to get, if not flag football, tackle football. Because there have been, of course, problems that, like, when girls do get on the teams, on the boys' teams, and there's, like, such a big deal about it and, you know, this and that. And, you know, so just if that's the case, then, you know, put up the money and get the girls' teams together.
Get a girls' team. Now, when they play in essentially girls have gotten onto a boys' football team. Is it your information that they people really go after them physically? Or
do
they stay away from them because they don't want to go near
No,
them?
I don't think. I think, and I have some, actually two girls that I'm going to interview about this. There was this whole thing on a team in New Jersey, a high school team. I think it was a junior varsity team, I believe, and I met the two girls. They're 15 years old, and the father was there too. And they're twins, and they were on this team, and you know, like they, you know, they were they were annoyed. The team was kind of annoyed, you know, that they were playing, but they weren't playing. And usually, what happens when girls get on the team is they might be a kicker or the, you know, kind of thing, you know.
Not contact.
Yeah, but these two women, they were linebackers.
Oh, that's great.
And the team was doing quite well. But what I came across, because like when I heard about this, I said, yeah, I want to not just get an interview, but I'd like to invite these girls to come to one of our football games. And I couldn't get through. I had a hard time because now the coaches were saying they're getting too much publicity. And it's like, excuse me, if it was a guy and he was doing, a young guy, and he was like scoring a lot, loads and loads of touchdowns, they would not welcome the publicity?
Well, they always love publicity.
Right, but if it's the publicity because they're focusing on the two girls, that's what they didn't want.
Interesting.
Yes, I mean, this is... Yeah, these are the things that I hear. I mean, I'm not sure with even some of the other ones, because as soon as I find out, you know, that there's a girl playing on a team, you know, I want to get them at least to we have had something called JPD program, which we teach girls between the ages of 13 and 17 how to play football, and you know, and getting in touch with them. And here's the part that was most interesting about it. The two girls, I mean, here they were playing. I mean, like, they're already playing tackle football, whereas, on a team where most everybody else who was there, it was at least 150 girls, may have never even either played on a team or played football or you know, anything like that. And I was asking the father, I said, like, what do they get out of it? By, you know, coming to this kind of a thing. And the father says that they said that just the idea of the camaraderie of playing with women, girls, is the thing that they really enjoyed. I guess it's, you know, it's a different family kind of thing.
Well, there's another reason I would think that young people want to play football, whether they're male or female, and that's in the United States, that's our religion,
yes.
Football.
Yes.
It is, football, I mean, you can't touch it, you know, nothing else can touch it. So, of course, people like to be where the action is, and children like to be where the action is. So
right.
To exclude, you know, girls is just, it's crazy. And there's an economic aspect to it also, which is...
Sure.
College scholarships.
Yes.
At most colleges, you know, there's 100 full-ride scholarships for these guys who are playing football. They don't put 100 people on the field. I mean, this is a very a very good way for high school kids to get, you know, have their way paid to colleges.
Yeah.
And so it's just excluding half the population when you downplay high school sports for females. That
yeah.
would be my opinion, anyway.
Yeah. That's quite true. But so how do you like? How are you? Are you looking for? I guess you must be looking forward to October, huh?
Well, yes. Although I'm an extremely modest person, I'm delighted they're gonna. Talk about women's rights, and I'm very much looking forward to the induction ceremony. and to some of the other people who are, you know, meeting some of the other people who are being inducted. And something that's happened, this was announced on Monday, and we're talking on Thursday here, is I have been amazed at, my phone is ringing off the hook. People are calling me from all over the country. You honored me. You called me and asked me if I want to go on the radio. I said, sure. And I'm getting dozens of letters and postcards and cards. And to me, although it's very gratifying for me, and obviously I'm delighted, to me it's a feather in the cap of the feminist movement. So I'm very happy about the whole event, and I am looking forward to October. And I'm happy to, you know, answer any questions that you have about women's rights.
Well, I probably, like, you know, like at some point we're going to schmooze again.
Okay.
Of, you know, of things that come up, because it's like, you know, I always think seeing things going on. So it would be, you know, actually fabulous to just, you know, ask your opinion of this, or what do you think, or what do you think we can do? I mean, I'm always running into stuff, not necessarily aimed at me, because I'll fight it. You know, it's like, yeah, I'm a woman, and that's, you know, it's like, yeah, and what's your point? That's my attitude. But that's always been my attitude, kind of like, yeah, I'm a female, and so what? So why can't I do that? So give me that job. What do I care?
Well, one of the things that I think makes me so proud of the feminist movement is many people probably aren't as gutsy as you are. And so it's very helpful to have a whole movement.
Yes.
Fighting for people. There are some people that on their own they can walk through any glass ceiling or brick wall or whatever metaphor you want to use. But in general, it's extremely helpful to have a movement behind you.
Yes,
and,
it is. And not we're not talking about a bowel movement either.
No, we certainly aren't.
Yeah.
We certainly aren't.
I warned you.
You did?
I did warn you about my being a comedian. So
you said you were a comedian, and
yes.
You said...
you never know what I'm going to say.
You also said that... you changed your name to Exit so you could see your name in lights?
That's true.
And what I thought naturally after we hung up when we talked the first time, this being the second time, was naturally I thought about it after we hung up. But I wondered if you got discouraged when you, you know, went around your life and saw all these signs, no exit, no exit.
No.
Did you feel rejected?
No, not at all.
You don't feel rejected, okay.
No. I more or less I would find the you know, like I'd be driving a car with somebody would say exit only here, and I went, well, you can't go, only I can go.
Only you can drive there, right?
Yeah, but that was an old joke from my uncle once said that to me when I was like 9 or 10. He said, change your name to Exit so you'll see your name up in lights. And so when I got into show business as a comedian, I said, oh, there's the line. Okay, I'm gonna use it.
You know, speaking of comedians, now there's so many women doing comedy.
Yeah, finally.
Finally, exactly. But when I was growing up, I'm 71 years old, we were sort of told, let the guys be funny. You know, our role is to laugh at their jokes. And there weren't, a lot of women comics, and there weren't opportunity in comedy clubs for women. And it was you know, there were women who were, of course, you know, hilariously funny. But as far as public life, there weren't, you know, too many. And I remember I was once on a television show with Joan Rivers. You know, we were each on this show, and we were chatting in the green room. And she was telling me, you know, being a female comedian was really, very rare. It was sort of like being a female football player.
Yeah.
It wasn't acceptable. So that's great that there are women in comedy.
Yeah, I know. By the way, I just want to say, I know, Kelly, I know you're there waiting to come. I see you. No, I'm not ignoring you, Kelly. We just...
Oh, in other words, my 15
no,
minutes
no.
are up.
Oh, no, it's just that, you know, I sometimes when we have callers, they're not sure if I know that they're, that I know that they're calling in.
Okay.
And I just, like, you know, like, I see the phone number and I'm, you know, just wanted to, you know, I know she hears me.
Well, Karen will say goodbye, and you
yep.
can talk to Kelly, and it's been a great pleasure, Merle, talking
yes.
to you.
And, yes, I'll be in touch, and I'll be up in Seneca Falls on the weekend of the 13th.
Oh, well, I look forward to meeting you then.
Yeah, cool, because I'll be doing a show from up there.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Well, I'll speak to you before or then.
Okay.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye. You see?
Hi, Merle.
Hi. See, I didn't forget you.
No, it was such a perfect segue. When I joined you, Karen was talking about having a movement behind you, and it just felt like I should have just jumped right in, but then you were talking about comedy, and I love comedy, so I thought, well, wait and see what jokes you tell.
Well, I try not to, but it's like, you know, like things get triggered off. As soon as she said movement, my brain went, you know, okay,
yeah.
no, we don't mean a bowel movement.
You couldn't
know, like,
help yourself.
I can't help myself. You know, I mean, it's like, you know, then the jokes will come into my head, like, you know, what's brown and lays on top of the piano?
What is it?
Beethoven's last movement.
Oh.
You know, so this is what happens.
Oh, no.
From so many years of comedy, it's just like, you know, just, okay, I'll try not to say that. You know, but, no, okay, I'm sorry. It's coming out of my mouth.
It's still coming.
Yeah,
I'm
gotta,
sure.
Gotta leave, you know. But anyway, so, yes, so introduce yourself to my audience.
Sure. Well, my name is Susan Kelly Dreis. And like Karen, and I'm certainly honored to be in the group in which Karen DeCrow is included, I'm being inducted into the Women's Hall of Fame in October of this coming year.
And tell us who you are and why.
And why.
Why you.
And why me, indeed. It has a lot to do with that movement, but not the kind you were talking about. Really, you know, many of us who are, Karen mentioned being 71. I'm younger than that, but not by a whole lot. But many of us lived and were fortunate to live when the battered women's movement came out of the women's movement. And that was back in the 1960s, so sort of dates us. But we were very, you know, excited about getting all kinds of freedoms, you know, starting with the right to vote, the right to own property, the right to have a job and get equal pay. But one of the freedoms that was sort of hidden among those great topics was the freedom to live free from violence in our own homes. And around 1975, I was living in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and became part of a grassroots group that were women who were themselves victims of domestic violence or like myself, had grown up in a home where there was domestic violence. And we were really inspired by the women's movement and by wanting to protect women whose lives had become just horribly affected by being beaten at home. One night, one of the women ran out of her home in her nightgown and her slippers, wanting to get help, and realized she had no place to go. And that sort of became the impetus for our group organizing a shelter in Harrisburg. And it was truly grassroots, Merle. I mean, this shelter started, we had two staff, I was one of the staff, and 62 volunteers. So we had to raise funds and clean the toilet, going back to your symbols there.
Yeah.
So
no shit.
Yeah. So it was a real grassroots effort. Yeah. And we realized immediately that in addition to establishing a shelter to protect women, we were also needing to do all kinds of social change work and change the way society and institutions responded to domestic violence. So we were on our way, and I was contacted one day by a man from the Senate of Pennsylvania, and they were working in a committee, the Judiciary Committee, with some legal services attorneys who were looking at a protection from abuse law. Now, this was brand new. There was one law in the country that was in New York State, and it was seen as really revolutionary. And so these attorneys were looking to see if we should have a bill like that in Pennsylvania. And they asked me to help organize advocates who were themselves working with victims of domestic violence into lobbying and testifying for this bill. So that was how I started to get into a leadership position in terms of public policy. It was very exciting. I had called the other programs in our state. There were six of them throughout the state that were trying to get established. So this is back in 1976. And we started testifying. That bill passed unanimously. We had a Protection from Abuse Act in 6 months. And, you know, we thought we could do anything to get a bill through that quickly. The big lifetime opportunity for me in working on that particular bill was in meeting all the other advocates from across our state and in meeting advocates from other places like Marjorie Fields from New York State. I went on to help then coordinate and found the Pennsylvania Coalition Against Domestic Violence, and we became the first domestic violence coalition in the country. And that means that now not only am I not working in a shelter, I was working in my kitchen. That was really not even an organization. We had to start from scratch. And in those days, a lot of the work that was done in women's programs, you know, was so grassroots that it was done around kitchen tables. So I have a wonderful painting that my organization commissioned many years later that shows my kitchen table, and the idea being that this is how many wonderful things got started. And that was the beginning of our organization in 1976. We just did a lot of advocacy work in addition to setting up services. We have 62 programs now in Pennsylvania. But most of all, I think our role was to do the social change activities. We supported the local programs, but a state coalition does public policy work at the state level and then also at the national level. So true to form, a few years after we started our state coalition, this was happening all over the country. And in fact, all over the world, women were organizing to stop domestic violence. And we then started to realize we needed to have a federal response, not just a local and state response. So we called for a meeting nationally, and out of that came a couple national organizations, one of which I was directly responsible and had the most exciting fun forming the National Network to End Domestic Violence in 1985. And we worked on policy initiatives at the federal level, the Family Violence Prevention and Services Act. And then with our now Vice President, Senator Joe Biden, worked on the Violence Against Women Act. So that was many years in the making to get those bills through. But all through that, there were advocates coming from every corner of the country. So it was very exciting to hear the different methods that were being used to do outreach, you know, in the territories. I mean, in places like Guam, outreach in the Native American communities. So this has been a really important part of my life, and I'm so happy to see that so many successes have occurred. One of the proudest projects that we have in Pennsylvania is the National Resource Center on Domestic Violence. And for people who love to go on blogs or just like to sit and look up good information, there's a wonderful online service called VONET, www.vonet.org, which is run by the National Resource Center and has just all the most recent research and what the press is saying about domestic violence. It even talks about the National Women's Hall of Fame. So I would encourage people who may be listening or read this to go online and to get a lot of the information if they're interested.
Sure. Now you said it was bonnet or vonnet? I didn't get the word.
Bonnet. The word actually comes from the Violence Against Women, VAW.
Oh, okay.
Net. That's what that stands for. Yeah, and it's a total, just an online National Resource Center.
Well, that's great to know, yeah. So are you still in Harrisburg?
I am, yes. After many travels, I'm now retired and living in Hershey.
Are you aware of the women's football team there?
No.
No.
Oh, I can go and watch.
You have a women's tackle football team. We played them last season. They play in Harrisburg, and it sounds like they're coming out of the Lancaster area and play in Harrisburg. I'm not sure. Let me take a quick look and see if we're playing them this season. Or they're playing us this season. I'm not sure. Hey, let's go to this quick
one. Oh, well, I'm sorry. I didn't know that. It sounds like a fun event.
No, we're not playing them this season.
No?
No.
Okay.
That's okay.
next season.
I remember that, you know, we were playing them. I don't know how well they did at all, but I just... you know, it's just interesting to see where all the tackle football teams are. And of course, like I'll ask somebody and they'll say, oh, I didn't know we even had a women's tackle football team. You know?
Yes, that's right. And it's something that I'd like to go and see if I can find them.
Yeah, I'll I think if you go to it's IWFLSports.com. That's the league.
Okay.
Independent Women's Football League, and you'll be able to see the team. I can't think of the name of the team.
I can look it up.
But I guess we've come very far in terms of domestic violence, but it's, you know, as far as we come, there's that thing with what's her name?
Rihanna?
Yeah.
Oh, I know. I just was watching the news this morning, and the report was that evidently, you know, he was charged with two felonies. Now, that means that it was serious abuse.
Right.
Not misdemeanors, but felonies.
Right.
But now they're back together.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
you know,
but the question is why?
Yeah, and of course, you know, I don't know, or none of us know what their situation is exactly. But I've seen a lot of situations like this. So,
you never know if it's, you know, good to come back to me or I'll kill you. You know, that.
Well, there.
You know, that's, That's what we see on TV a lot. You leave and I'll kill you.
Oh,
I mean, it's
my
always
goodness.
The threat of, you know, is it, and it's so, like, when I hear that, I say, what? She doesn't want to be with you. Don't you get it?
I know.
You just beat the shit out of her. Why do you think she would want that, you know?
I know. It's very hard.
I love you. I need you. You leave me, I'll kill you. What?
Yeah,
it
right. Does that make any sense? No, it doesn't. And sometimes it takes a number of these episodes before the woman is ready to walk out. Or I know in my mother's case, because I lived with this situation growing up, that it was when the violence threatened the kids,
yeah,
and that did it. And not that she left, but that there were arrangements, the police were called, etc. So I hope it's something that, you know, this young woman Rihanna, is safe. But hopefully, you know, if she needs help, there's lots of help around LA. That's for sure.
Yeah, I hope so. I was in a Many years ago, I was in a marriage. We had one fight. It was one physical fight.
Mm.
That was the end of the marriage.
Is that
That's
right?
It. That's it. You just. I just got in the hospital. My shoulder got out of, you know, went out of its socket. I had to go get surgery. This happened, and that's it. This.
Yeah, I think that's a very
there's nothing
good
more.
Rule.
There's nothing to debate. There's nothing like. There's no I'm sorry. There's no I'll never do it again. It'll never whatever. It's over. It's finished.
Yeah, I think that's a good rule, Meryl.
I'm like, wait a minute. You know, when something happens that gets to that point, then you say it's no thanks.
You make
I don't want
an exit.
This.
Yeah.
Don't want it.
Yeah, I think that's a very good rule to have. But, you know, sometimes partners will stay with the abusive partner for reasons that, you know, perhaps you and I would never do, but nevertheless, they will stay. And it'll take something in their minds that is the worst possible thing. I don't know what, you know, when somebody threatens you with murder, but it's true that sometimes women will stay. But on the other hand, I also know that many times, you know, they're sort of planning how to do this to keep themselves and the kids as safe as possible,
right?
So that they may be listening to this, but at the same time, you know, planning that, you know, by tomorrow when you go to work, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
So I'm happy now that we have resources and
shelters.
That's
a really good thing. I didn't get to ask. I know you didn't get to hear the beginning of the show. I had a woman on there, Mary Mulvihill of the Grace Institute, and it's a company here in New York City, and all they do is give free training to women so they can better themselves.
What kind of training?
Job training.
Great.
And so they have the, you know, they give them a job training, and it doesn't go, I mean, I think they may have to pay for books or something like that. Because I was also, and they all have to show up in business suits. And I said, well, what if they don't have? And they said, well, they work with places that'll donate the clothing as well.
That's
but I didn't,
great.
I didn't, I think we might have touched something, but I wasn't, I wanted to ask her, in terms of where the women are they getting women from shelters? In other words, are they getting women like in this situation? And I got to leave my husband, and I was depending on him for my income, kind of thing. I don't have any skills, and what are they getting? And by the way, this is not. I had also asked if this was like, do you have to live in New York City? And she said, you don't have to, I mean, you know, in terms of getting there, you don't have to be a resident of New York City.
Yeah. Okay, good.
So
I'm sure they are getting referrals from shelters, because I know the shelters in our state are part of a network through the Department of Public Welfare where they will refer women to job training that is
mm-hmm.
sponsored by contractors at the Department of Public Welfare.
It's good, yeah.
And it's really so essential. Of course, you know, in this day and age, that's going to be a real bottom line. It's a worry now that people are getting laid off and the economy is bad. It's going to be even more important to get that job training.
Oh, yeah. Yep, certainly is. So, actually, it's too bad you're in Harrisburg because I'm, you know, going up to Seneca Falls. I'd say, come on over and, you know, and say hello. But
well, maybe I will do that. My husband, who's from New York City, and I come into New York a couple times a year. And
okay.
I will call you.
Yes, by all means, you know. We can schmooze.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
And always love coming into New York City. And for sure, I'll see you in Seneca Falls.
Yes.
Great.
Yeah. I don't know that I'll try to make it in October, but I'll be up there on the 13th.
Oh, good. Oh, yes. Good.
And
wonderful.
doing a radio show right from Seneca Falls.
Oh, that's great, Merle. I'm so glad it's getting that kind of exposure. That's terrific.
Yeah. Yeah. I am too. You know, and I've been also doing what I can for the legacy thing that they
yes.
have? Lives and Legacies, I think it's called.
I think that's right.
Yeah, and to put the word out there, especially because when people, you know, try and think of a gift for somebody,
yeah,
you know, and if they think on this, I mean, like, $100 may sound like, you know, an expensive gift to somebody. But we're not saying that. But it's not like one person needs
right.
to spend $100. You get a group of people together to honor one woman, and you split the cost.
That's a
know?
Very good idea.
And
yeah.
I think that's a fabulous idea.
Yeah, people
as
at work or you know someplace where there is a group of women.
Yeah,
so that's a great idea.
Yep. So, well, heck, I mean, you can have 10 men that honor one woman.
Absolutely. Even 100.
Yeah, you know, like you have 10, you got 10 men that work for a woman, and they say, we need to suck up to her. What can we do? You know, and do it. Yeah, do it.
Exactly. And during Women's History Month would be the perfect time to
That's
do
right.
it.
That's right. Well, it's great speaking with you. I'm so
you
glad
too,
you were
Merle.
Able to call in.
Well,
and,
thank you for having me.
Yes, and keep doing what you're doing. You know,
you too.
And yeah, so take care. Have a great evening. You know, we'll
will
meet.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah. So that's pretty cool. So what I'm gonna do? Well, let's see. I gotta tell you, I'm in the mood. I'm gonna do one little song here. Wait, one. Where's the one? Okay. Let's get a song. Here's a song of my heart. All right.
That we love to see. Every time we hear the music and feel in this love together, we got the kind that lasts forever. right. And it's just the way we planned it. We're in this love together. We got the kind that lasts forever. Don't you know that we're in this love together? And like berries on the vine, get sweeter all the
watches the show Chopped. That's on the Food Network channel. And our executive chef, Mina Newman, was on the show. And she won. I think she won $10,000. She didn't get chopped. And I'm going to have her on Tuesday to interview her. About the restaurant that she works in, a steakhouse in Astoria, Queens. And then that's in the next Thursday. I won't have a show on Thursday because I'm going to go up to Seneca Falls and we'll do a show from there that weekend. I will post when we're going to do it. But and before I go, I just I also want to like share. I want to see the show Guys and Dolls on Broadway, and I wanted to comment on it. Well, first of all, I'm not, there's nothing, if you don't know the plot, well, forget it. I mean, like, I'm not going to tell you the plot. You don't need to know everybody should know the plot by now. But here was a really great points about it. The most unusual thing was that, you know, when you go to a Broadway show and they have the overture and, you know, you sit there, you know, with your thumb up your ass while you stare at a curtain, you know, and you see the guy with the baton. This time, no, not at all. There's actually there's all this, like, choreography and stuff going on the stage with the cast as they're going through the overture. The orchestra is actually on tiers. Not like the ones that you get from your eyes when you cry, and yeah. But they're on tiers at the back of the stage during the show, but you don't see them because the curtain that covers them then starts showing all this video thing. So it makes for when not just the set changes, but as the characters like are moving, you see it as if like they're moving in the streets, around the streets as well, which I thought was like pretty cool. of course, the music was great. Everyone did a fabulous job, I can't say that she didn't do a good job. I have this credit this or non credit this rather to the director. It was a part of Adelaide, and everybody's heard the song. You know, Adelaide's lament. You know, a person could develop a cold. You know, and the character never had a nasal voice. So even when she was singing, you know, the song, she didn't sound like she really had a cold. And that's, you know, what makes it kind of humorous is that she's talking like this, you know, in the show when she's doing it. That's the whole part. But if she's not talking like that, then the humor is kind of lost. So I don't know. I don't know why the hell they did that. Notice I didn't say fuck. I mean, I just said hell. Why the hell they did that? I mean, because I wouldn't want to use that on the air. So, as I said, everything else, I would name the people that are in it. Oliver Platt plays Nathan Detroit. Lauren Graham is the one who plays Miss Adelaide. Craig Bierko is Sky Masterson. And Kate Jennings Grant is Sarah Brown. And far be it from me, except for Oliver Platt, and then staring at the playbills to find who everybody else is. I didn't really know who they were just by looking at them. But that's okay. I mean, it's all about the show and whether the show is enjoyable and well worth it. The theater is on the small side. And anyway, it's really great. So go see Guys and Dolls on Broadway. And put this on here. Whoa, okay. Before yes, we got 3 minutes to go. If anybody has to. And so I'm gonna leave you. Yes, Mallory wants to. She's been nudging me. She's been very quiet. But everybody. Say hello to everyone. Say goodbye to everyone. I know you're the host of the show. I understand.